The student becomes the teacher.
It's Lecture Me, brought to you by Blue Hills Secondhand Books in Parnell.
That's us.
That's my voice as well.
Is it?
Yeah. I only clocked like a couple of weeks ago that I did that Parnell Blue, that sting like ages ago.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
well,
in preparation for you to arrive.
Oh, good. Oh, well, I'm here. Very good. And you're normally on this side of the desk.
I know. I was saying, I'm like, why is it so much more nerve-wracking being on the other side? I feel a lot more nervous being on this side.
Do you really?
I do. I
feel
like.
To be nervous.
Yeah, it's the lack of control, I think.
Yeah, you're out of control.
I know. I know. I'm in your at the whim of you.
Yes. Okay. So, lecture me. Of course, you're going to tell us about your latest lecture. I had to look up what this business was of pee hacking.
Yeah, I had a bit of a fever dream last night where I was like, oh, why did I pick this topic? Because I remember being in high school and there was this kind of statistician that was working for the police, and he came in and he was wearing this t-shirt and it said, before you raid a pee lab, make sure you have a pee value. And he thought that everyone would understand this joke, and no one in the high school understood it. And I was studying statistics at the time and I didn't even really know what pee values were, and I think most people at high school didn't really know what pee labs were either, so the talk was pretty atrocious from then. So I was thinking, oh gosh, so I'm gonna have to work hard to get everything. So if I'm saying anything that's like reminding you of that kind of talk, just pull me back into line.
So what was the t-shirt like?
It was just a plain black t-shirt and it just had the white writing on it, and he thought it was one of the funniest jokes ever, but yeah, it just really wasn't. But I kind of get it now. It's more funny now that I understand what's going on.
You'll have to get one. You'll have to go one of those embroidery places in the mall.
And get it printed.
Get it printed, yeah. So you've just finished a degree in statistics. The topic's pee hacking. The lecture was Stats 730. Is it statistical inference or statistical interference?
Inference.
Oh, inference. It is inference, right.
Yeah. So it's essentially when you've collected some data on something and you're wanting to draw some conclusions about what's going on. That's the inference part, is like, what can we infer from what we've collected? So
what can we make up?
Yeah. Oh, this is the other thing I worried about last night before I was coming in. I was like, why am I coming in to talk about the most controversial part of my field that people use to slander statistics with? But, I mean, here we are.
Okay. And the course is, do you say data or data?
I always say data. Oh, no, data. Data science.
New Zealanders do say data.
Americans say data.
No, yeah. No, British English is data.
Well, like, yeah, Daytona.
Datum. It is actually that, but I can't, it's easier to say data, isn't it?
I like data. It kind of sits nicer.
Should we call it data then?
We'll call it data science.
All right, so the course was Masters of Data Science. Your lecturer has got a great name, Elaine C. Vandal.
Yeah, exactly. And I called him Elaine, Alan or Elaine for a long time, but he's French-Canadian, so he would always insist on Elaine.
Elaine.
Yes.
Is he a good lecturer?
Incredibly good. He's probably one of our top medical statisticians and has done so much great work, and he's a kind soul.
So have you got something in for marking then, have you?
No, he's actually already marked my dissertation and thesis, so but I'm still working with him, so I still need to be good friends.
Great. So how many years is this course, Masters of Data Science?
So because I did a long undergraduate, sort of undergraduate in engineering, and then I did my master's in data science. It was
data
science. It's 1.5 years. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So I've just finished. I like handed in and everything at the end of July. So all my coursework's done, and now I'm just kind of wrapping up the papers that are coming out from the research. Yeah.
And so what's next year then? What do you do next year?
I enact being a data scientist. Yes.
Do you?
Yes, that's the idea.
For whom?
Got
a gig yet?
Currently open for offers at the moment, so I'm running through the LinkedIn rigmarole of applying for things. But yeah, the scope of the what you can do with it is really broad, because I think it doesn't matter what domain you're working in, there's data there. So that's kind of you can be working for financial companies, government companies, music companies. You can be making the Spotify algorithm hopefully more fair and better. You can be working as policy analysts, you can be working for environmental spaces. So
have you applied for all of these places?
Well, if you can show me where the jobs are, I'll be applying for them. So, there's limited roles at the moment. It's a tough market at the moment.
Is it?
Yes. It's.
There are a lot of students in this course.
A few of them, like I think maybe in my year there was maybe like 130.
That's a lot.
Yeah, 120. It's quite the hot thing at the moment. Everyone wants to work in artificial intelligence and machine learning and things like that.
And so it crosses over into that arena.
Yeah, that's where, like, it sounds a lot less kind of cool and fun to say you're a statistician, but if you say, oh, yeah, I'm an artificial intelligence engineer, then people look at you with either evil eyes or a smile, depending on what side they swing.
Obviously, you swing on the side of right. Is might.
I know that it's. Yeah, I.
You know that it's wrong.
I know that there's lots wrong with it, but I feel some sort of empowerment to go in there and try and do the right thing.
Okay. Yeah. What is the right thing? It's certainly not statistical inference,
it's
is
certainly,
it?
It's certainly not p-hacking, yes.
No, okay. So tell us about this particular lecture, Stats 730, Statistical Inference. Yeah, what did you learn?
It's more a set of lectures, but essentially we start off with, before we can know what p-hacking is, we've got to know what a p-value is. So p-values, they appear everywhere in science. Like, from, you'd be hard-pressed to find, you know, many papers that don't draw or talk about p-values. And essentially what they are is that when we're conducting an experiment, so for example, we're wanting to find out whether a particular drug helps you recover quicker from some sort of sickness. So you give, you know, one group of people a placebo, and then you give the other group of people the drug, and you measure their time to recovery. And then we've always got these two fighting hypotheses. So let's say it took, I don't know, 10 days for the people that took the drug to recover and 15 days for the people that took the placebo to recover. There's two things that could be happening. Either the drug's working, which is, and that's the reason why that group's recovered quicker from the illness, or that there's just elements of random chance that are causing that group to recover quicker. Like, there was.
Would that be statistically accurate?
Yeah, so those things are always competing. It's the same if you, Karen, you had a dice and you wanted to roll that dice 10 times, and you could roll the 6, 10 times in a row. That is still possible, and but it could just be that you rolled 6, 10 times in a row because you just got lucky. So there's two things at play. You could either be a master dice roller and you just know how to roll a 6, or it could be that you just got lucky. And p-values give us the ability to measure how likely it was that
I got lucky.
That we just got lucky. And that's
I was a master
die
roller.
Yeah, or that you were a master die roller. So, when we, doing a drug trial and we see this difference in recovery time, the p-value allows us to say, how likely was it that that was just luck? Or and it's a value that kind of ranges from 0 to 1. And the lower the value, the less likely that we just got lucky. And we've agreed scientifically to set this cutoff of 5%. Sometimes we call it like a 0.05 cutoff. And we say that, you know, if there's less than a 5% chance that just luck's at play, then we can kind of draw the conclusion that either you're a master dice roller or that this particular drug is actually doing something interesting. So we have this kind of, we can never completely conclude that there wasn't luck at play, but we try and draw the kind of conclusion that some sort of scientific conclusion, if we have good evidence that it was less likely that luck was at play. Is it?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Okay, yeah. So I'm just trying to remember what that T-shirt said again.
It said if you're going to
raid a P-lab,
you better have a p-value. So, like, I don't know, for example, like, let's say the house is smelling a lot like washing powder and you're seeing that, you know, the there's smoke coming out the chimney all the time. It could be that that's a P-Lab, but it also could be that, I don't know, they just wash their clothes a lot or something. Like, there's always these things at play.
Okay.
But what it...
It's all starting to make sense.
Yeah, but what it infers is that essentially like 5% of all kind of papers or kind of results that we arrive at can still be just arrived at by chance alone, because we've set this arbitrary cutoff. And yeah, the practice of p-hacking is artificially getting below this 5% cutoff rate.
Artificially?
Yeah, so you can, like, say for example, in the drug testing arena, you've got kind of 20 different versions of this particular drug. You've got drug A, drug B, drug C, and you're wanting to find the one that helps you recover quicker from this disease. We know that there's a 5% chance of kind of concluding that the drug's doing something even when, you know, it's doing nothing when we're just using one drug. But the more drugs that we're comparing, the more likely, just by pure luck, we're going to find this drug that looks like it's doing something when it really isn't. And same with you being a dice roller. Let's say you had 50 different dices and you rolled them 10 times. The chances that you roll 10 sixes is going up the more dice that you look at. And the problem is if you don't talk about all the other dices that you rolled, all the other die that you rolled, or all the other drugs that you checked, you can lead people to believe something that is not necessarily true. And this has led to this massive, or quite a big crisis in science called the replication crisis, where essentially lots of results that people have come to and published within science, people are really struggling to replicate them. There's many reasons for this, but incorrect statistics and this form of p-hacking to artificially land at a value below this 5% threshold is causing it, and it causes like people to lose trust in science and kind of make this void for people to kind of critique science because of these problems. And yeah, it's become a real big problem. Like essentially, I think like a few years ago there was a big kind of study conducted that people were trying to replicate. It was over 50 of the kind of greatest breakthrough cancer treatment papers, you know, huge amount of money gone into replicating the science, and they found that they could only repeat or replicate 11% of the results, which was completely shocking. And then, you know, same like in psychology, so maybe in 2021 there was like a look to replicate over 100 different papers, and they could only replicate just over 50% of these results. And yeah, that's
shoddy.
It is. And it's sometimes nefarious, and sometimes it's purely accidental that these things can happen. But yeah, obviously replication's important because we can arrive at results just by chance. Like you can just roll 10 sixes in a row, even if the dice is still a fair dice, and that's why replication within science is so important. But yeah, given that we've landed at this kind of replication crisis where papers are really struggling to be replicated, it's causing a lot of like mistrust in science.
Well you learned a lot.
Yeah, so I don't know, I kind of was absolutely rambling.
No, I understood. Well, to a certain point, I understood. I understood the theory. In practice, I probably wouldn't be able to do it. What will happen if you don't get a job next year?
What would happen if I don't get a job?
What will you do? Have you thought about that? I guess it's all, you probably will, because you've got a degree and, you know.
I preferred not to think of this
don't
negative
think about
trait.
It.
I just keep improving my BFM show, hopefully. Spending time on that show.
Possibly shouldn't have asked you that. How about I ask you what your track is that you're going to play?
Oh, yes. You just before I came on, and then I was going to pick one that you already had played. So I ended up picking Chanel Beads with a track called F-E-F.
Are you playing this at home?
I am a lot. I've been rinsing the new Chanel Beads album. They're kind of the cool kids out of New York at the moment, so I'm trying to be a cool kid, and I've gone back and listened to some of the older stuff, but this track's very dreamy and ethereal and maybe makes you feel cool.
Cool kid with a K.
Yeah, exactly. K for Karen.
Hey, thank you very much, Eli.
Thank you so much.
And what about the whole concept of p-hacking for yourself? I mean, you know, given that you know all this, but I mean, I guess anybody who studies statistics knows this anyway.
You'd think so. Some still fall into this trap of doing things accidentally.
Anyway,
yes.
Right. Oh, well, you won't.
No, I won't. I won't. And I'll try and tell people off if they do.
I bet you won't.
Yeah.
Or you might. Okay. Hey, thanks very much.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Let's listen to F, E, F.
Yeah.
F.
Let's do it.